How do you price an ad on your channel? That's probably the most common question we get from other creators. And it was the biggest question we had when we first started on YouTube. So we're hosting a live workshop on how to price yourself. This is everything that we've learned in the past 13 years of being on YouTube and our simple three-step process that'll help you develop concrete pricing. So if you want to join us for this live session, just go to colinandsamir.com/live. Enter your email and you'll get all the information about our live event on May 9th. All right, hope you enjoy this episode of The Colin and Samir Show.
Netflix is done. They're $10 billion in debt. There's no way they can make money.
Shares are down about 8% so far this year.
They're not going to be able to keep up.
It's not completely clear how this is going to evolve.
Netflix surging to a brand new all-time high today.
Squid Game has a rare 100% critics rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's number one in 90 countries.
It's mind-blowing.
Squid Game.
Netflix's most watched series of all time.
It's really become a global phenomenon.
These guys have the globe kind of to themselves.
Netflix will be the most valuable media company in the world.
Now, fair warning, this episode is going to have a lot of spoilers. Now is your fair warning to go watch all of Squid Game if you don't want it to be spoiled. If you do want it to be spoiled, if you've already seen it, this episode is for you.
In this episode, we're going to break down our thoughts on Squid Game, why it's so successful, and what creators can learn from it.
All right, Colin, roll the intro. All right, so I saw a lot of memes about Squid Game, but I actually at first thought it was a reality show. Definitely not a reality show, but kind of is rooted in reality.
Sure.
My first question for you is, how did you watch it? Because it is a show from South Korea. So how did you watch it? Did you watch it with subtitles or did you watch it with English dub?
English dub.
Oh man, me too. We are totally in the minority and
really?
We're totally wrong.
I don't think so.
I went back and watched one of the episodes with the Korean actors, like their actual emotion.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Better.
I mean, like you're actually hearing how they intended the characters to act.
But the reading.
The reading is hard. The reading is hard.
Yeah.
Yes. But I watched it with the English dub and that is controversial. So I'm curious.
Why is that controversial?
Because it's like, that's not how the show was intended to be made. The show wasn't made with these actors. These are completely different actors acting with different emotion who weren't there. Like they aren't in it.
The dub was almost comical at times, which may be intentional.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was great to watch with the dub. I'm actually thinking about going and watching it again in Korean with the subtitles. There is a really good line from, I think it's the creator of the show that said, if viewers can get over the barrier of a 1-inch subtitle text box, the world of film will open up to them. And I think that's really interesting that now we're starting to open up to more global content. And I think social has brought that to us, like global content through social media, through us all sharing experiences. But this show was at least the first time that I experienced a Netflix show like this taking over the global conversation. I mean, I think it's the first time Netflix has experienced it.
So if you're unfamiliar with Squid Game, hopefully you are familiar because you're watching this video, but if you're unfamiliar, it is a narrative show that has taken over Netflix.
It's a show about a bunch of people who are in debt in South Korea, and they get invited to a place to play a series of games where the winner at the end of all of these games will win an amount of money that is so large that it would solve all their money problems.
And these are children's games. They're going to play 6 games while they're there. But if you lose a game, you die.
So the stakes are incredibly high, both in terms of these people who are really in a bad place from a monetary perspective. But when they get into the game, the consequences are really serious. Now, all of this information is slowly revealed to us over time. Even the way the game works, the different games that they're going to play, the different situations of some of the players in the game. And it is done in a way that I think just captivated a global audience to a scale that we've never seen before.
100%. So it's an extremely global show for a number of reasons. The first being that it was released in 34 different languages on the same day. Netflix alone is available in 190 countries. So it has the ability to reach a massive audience from day one.
I remember when I was younger and I would be in India and I would see Friends on screen and it was dubbed in Hindi. And I remember thinking like, that was so crazy. So it's something that's been done for, ages. And now we're starting to see it creep into, the social media world with Mr. Beast going into Spanish with like all these other creators starting to explore dubbing. But you really think about like the internet is a global place. So it makes sense that the content would be globally accessible.
It's all about having the maximum potential audience, setting yourself up for that level of success. Like there are certain topics that we could talk about on this show that we know don't have a huge audience.
So outside of the fact that it was dubbed and we could understand the language that they were speaking, the story itself had so much global appeal. And I think for anyone who's making something for a large audience, whether it's YouTube videos or anything on the internet, I think there's so much to be learned from how Squid Game was structured from a story perspective. Like this show and the narratives in it and the tropes in it, just globally appealing. So why don't we start by talking about like, what does that mean? What does that look like?
To start, it was extremely simple. From the locations to the outfits, everything was the most simple version. And I think what happens when you fix all of those elements and make them really simple, the story gets easier to follow.
I think not only does the story get easier to follow, but when everything is that simple, when the games are that simple, right? The first game they play is Red Light, Green Light. Everyone knows that game all over the world. And if you don't know it, you can understand it. Mm-hmm. You run when it's green light, you stop when it's red light. So that is so simple that you can actually put yourself in the position of the characters or, dare I say, step into their shoes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Which is why sales of vans spiked 7,800%.
Exactly. So that ability to put yourself in the position of the character, no matter where you are in the world, that relatability keeps you more engaged. At least I found that when I was watching. I was like, wait, would I be able to stop quick enough to not get shot? You know, like you're thinking that in your head, like how would I act in this game? And I think that's a really important thing for anyone who's telling a story, basically thinking about like, how relatable is this? Could you, even if this is a fantasy, right? Even if this is a fictional world, can you put yourself in the position of this character?
And from a storytelling perspective, what's important, right? It was not important for us to fully know how these different characters would dress when they're playing these games. Mm-hmm.
That was like a distraction. Almost,
it would be a distraction.
Like, it was just like, put them in these outfits. Like it is clear. The players wear this color, the scary triangle men and square men and circle men, the soldiers wear this color. The front man wears this color. Like mm-hmm. It was very clear cut.
It's very accessible. These are the rules. You can understand the rules from the second you start watching.
So we look at the games that they play. The game's really simple. Red light, green light. The next game was the honeycomb game, which mm-hmm. was one I hadn't heard of, but like the second you see it, you get it, right? Again, if you turn the sound off, you would understand what's happening in all of these games. You could piece it together yourself. Then it was tug of war. Mm-hmm. Then it was a marble game, which was really simple.
Which we're going to play.
And then it was hopscotch on glass.
Yes. Yeah.
But that was also understandable. It was like one of these is going to break, one of these doesn't. There it is. And then the last one was the Squid Game, which essentially was just a battle to the death.
And then on top of this, there is this theme of money that resonates all over the world in every different culture. Like we all are sort of beholden to this system that relies on money.
So that all of a sudden becomes universally understandable. The two things that this show hinges on are money and death. Those two things are universally understandable. We all, when we're alive, are playing by the rules of money. Some people are in debt. Some people have lots of money. And it's this game that we all understand.
Like, it is literally and figuratively hanging over our heads.
At all times. Yeah. Yes. And so that is so universally understandable. Like if you talk to anyone in any other country and you talk about making money, you get it.
Yeah.
Before I even saw the show, one thing I saw and I sent to everyone on our team was this meme where the front man was Mr. Beast's voice. Mm-hmm. And it was just so funny. And that's actually what pulled me into watching the show. I was like, this clearly relates to our world too. And for someone to be able to draw such a parallel between what Mr. Beast is doing and what's happening in this Netflix show, I thought that was really interesting.
It's one of the most successful formats mm-hmm. in all of entertainment. You think about The Price is Right, the longest running show on television. Mr. Beast, the number one channel on YouTube. Hunger Games, one of the most epic movie franchises.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Mm-hmm. It's just like money is a very universal stake. The interesting thing though, that I thought when I saw that Mr. Beast meme was the numbers that Netflix released about their viewership. Like Bridgerton had done 82 million views in the first 28 days. It's interesting is like, Jimmy is competing on that level a lot of times. Like a lot of his episodes have 100 million views. And it's clear that Squid Game is actually now the number one show ever on Netflix. So it's done better than that. So what else is it that makes this so appealing to watch and so engaging? And what Jimmy talks about a lot is retention. And I think what Squid Game did really well was utilize some retention strategies that were just so good at building up tension in our bodies and then releasing that tension and at the same time doing it in ways that we couldn't expect. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes they built tension in a way where you didn't expect how that release was going to go. Like for example, when, oh God, this was so dark. I thought when Sungwoo and Ali are partners in the marble game, mm-hmm. and you kind of want to believe Sungwoo that he's telling Ali the truth, that they're going to create a system for both of them to win. Cause Sungwoo has lost, he's going to die. And he's like, you know what? I got a solution for us. And you're kind of like, oh great. I've gotten so connected to this character, Ali. I don't want him to die. And then Sungwoo tricks him, puts a bunch of rocks in his hand and Ali dies. And you're like, oh my God. Like the tension that was built from that scene of like, oh, I don't want Sungwoo or Ali to die. Like both of these characters is just released by this like dark, twisted moment. And that happens in every episode. It happens in the series. But when you break it down to every scene, every episode, it's happening where there's incredible amounts of tension and then a release that sometimes is completely unexpected.
One tactic that Squid Game used very well was Jenga storytelling. So this is the idea that tension should rise over time. And I think they did a really good job of building tension that continues to rise from episode one all the way until the finale. One of them is money, right? There's more money up for grabs mm-hmm. the further the series goes along and the more people that die.
Yeah, basically money increases and amount of players decrease over time. So that means stakes just go crazy because one person's going to win all this money. So as the series goes on, that's happening, but it's also happening in the episodes as well, where when the episode starts and ends, like the stakes are rising through the episode, right? You don't know what's happening constantly, but you know people are going to die at the end of this episode. Like people are going to be eliminated. So the stakes are rising.
And another tension point is pain. The more time that goes on, the more painful it will be for one of the players to lose.
Right.
Because they've already invested so much time.
And not only have they invested time, but you're learning more about them. Like, I might butcher some of the names here. Sai Biek, she's like the main character. She's one of the last three. But you learn that she wants the money to save her little brother who's an orphan and needs like a family. And you're like, oh my God.
Stakes just increased.
Gi-young is like this deadbeat, you know, character who's always just wanted validation and wants a connection to his mom and wants a connection to his daughter. Like as time goes on, that stake gets crazy high because you're like, God, I want this guy to have some money. But what's interesting is that him winning money comes at the cost of someone losing their life or actually 400 some odd people losing their lives. So it's a very complex emotion to feel. The action of having to negotiate that in your mind of as these stakes rise builds a lot of tension because even when Gi-young is playing marbles with the old man, he's tricking him and you're not sure what you're supposed to feel. It's a complex emotion of am I happy that he's going to be okay and win because he's our main character? Or am I like really upset with him for tricking this guy? Like, I think that increase of stakes as well as this release of tension that is emotionally like a roller coaster where sometimes you're happy, sometimes you're sad, sometimes you're confused, that makes you so engaged in the show.
Yeah, you want to release tension at disproportionate levels because you want everyone on the edge of their seat, mm-hmm. totally unaware of what's going to happen next. And a great way to do this is to introduce new narratives to the story. And Squid Game did this really well. You have a scenario where everyone shows up, they think they're playing this game for money. They find out they're playing this game not only for money, but also for their life. And we think, okay, the only way you die is if you play the game and you get out. It's still terrible, but those are the rules. Then we learn when someone gets murdered that that's another way to lose the game.
That was wild because that introduction of that rule creates tons of mayhem. And again, in the viewer's mind, you're like, whoa, you figured that out along with the people in the show. And that I think is really compelling. And now at the same time, some of the narrative changes are also happening in a way where the audience knows something, but the main characters don't know something. Mm-hmm.
Another example is when they have to team up for one of the games. And teaming up is a good thing.
Right.
Right. So you want to choose your team wisely. Then in one of the next games, they team up and it turns out that they're playing against each other.
Oh, wow.
Right. So these are moments when you think you understand the rules, but you actually don't. They completely flip the switch. And that's really powerful from a retention standpoint when it comes to storytelling. Mr. Beast does it all the time.
Right. Mr. Beast does these narrative changes all the time where it's like, okay, you think that as long as you stay in this circle, you win. What you don't know is the circle's getting smaller. And what you don't know is then you're going to have to stand on one foot. And then what you don't know is that, you know, and like all of a sudden it's like, well, you didn't know what you didn't know, what you didn't know. But what Squid Game was doing was essentially they were saying, this means this, now this means that. And that's really compelling because, again, you have to keep your mind in the show to understand what's going on, to understand the complexities of like how these things are changing. And then they rooted in that pain that you were mentioning, like stakes where husband and wife are in the marble game together. That was hard because the husband comes back and he's like,
he's devastated.
He's devastated and he wants out of the game. And everyone's like, you already did it, man. Like, oh God, that scene is so tough.
Yeah. So what we're talking about here is keeping viewers on their toes by adding in new narratives. Let's say you're not a creator who's making a game show. If you're a cooking channel, how would you potentially work that into your story? Let's say you're doing a how-to, just for topic of conversation. Like, what would be a secondary narrative?
Yeah, I think we've seen it sometimes where like Try Guys, I think, are a great example where like Try Guys cook without a recipe. That's a great format to introduce unexpected things happening where like the audience knows the recipe or the audience knows how to make it. They don't know. They have to solve it. They're going to throw in different ideas in the middle. There's all the characters, like creating a dynamic where narrative changes can happen just because the characters are in that flow, I think works really well. I think you look at Jeff's Barbershop, which just is coming back now, is a great example of like scene changes and twists where someone's sitting down to get a haircut and they're talking. Those are two narratives that are happening. And then all of a sudden
Jake Paul enters.
Yeah. Or like new things are coming out of the closet. There's new elements getting thrown at. There's new challenges. Like, I think that's another example of a talk show that Jeff created that's so engaging because you don't know what's about to happen next. Mm. So I think that's a great lesson to learn around how to keep people engaged. You know, we're seeing this on a micro level with some of the TikTok creators we've talked about, whether it's Dylan LeMay with ice cream, where it's like he's making ice cream. There's a loop. There's a story he's telling. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times he even tells us doing the unexpected thing, you know, is what works really well, where like he actively tries to mess something up or actively tries to like put some of the blue ice cream into the vanilla ice cream so that viewers are like angry about that juxtaposition or like, why did you do that? Or like just creating situations for viewers to be
creating situations where there's room for what's not planned. Mm-hmm. I think travel vlogs have so much room for the unplanned to make the videos great.
All right. How does Squid Game impact the future of how creators are going to operate? The future of what we're going to see on YouTube specifically. When I was watching this, one thing I thought was really compelling, like I think all creators now are working on adding retention strategies to their videos, making sure that you are watching from start to finish of their videos. But not a lot of creators, I think right now, are thinking about video to video. And Squid Game did such a great job where when I ended an episode, it was impossible. I had to watch the next one. It was impossible. They left me on a cliffhanger. They left me with a question in my mind. They left me being like, I don't have a choice. I have to watch the beginning of the next episode to know how that completed. And I do think what we're going to start to see more of on YouTube is serialized formats. I think we're going to start to see creators put out a 12 episode series or a 6 episode series where each piece of content relates to each other. I think Shane Dawson has done this in the past and he's now recently coming back where he released, you know, The Mind of Jake Paul, where it's like episode to episode, you're tracking a narrative that's happening and he leaves you on a cliffhanger. And I think this serialized content format and like bingeable content that Netflix has done does allow for you to dominate a conversation for one pocket of time. The same way that like Tiger King in the US dominated conversation. Now Squid Game is dominating conversation. I think we're starting to see like creators probably want to own pockets of time like that.
It's just a much riskier thing for a creator to do than it is for Netflix to do.
Right.
Because Netflix runs a subscription business and the only thing they need to do is make sure they have great shows. Mm-hmm. And they can pay for a show up front that's super expensive and see if it works, see if it doesn't.
Yeah.
A creator may only have so much bandwidth. And you don't want to batch produce. But I do think what's interesting is, can I make a series that is still low lift enough that I can make it in real time, but I'm still planning for these cliffhanger moments?
Well, for example, like Mr. Beast circle video, let's go to that one. What if that video, same amount of stuff, same amount of production, happened over 4 episodes, but what was added was a deeper connection to each character and why they needed the money? Mm-hmm. What if you knew why they needed the money? All of a sudden, your investment level would go completely through the roof in some of these characters because you'd see yourself in the character. And I think that changes a lot.
It feels almost too painful, though, in real life.
You think so?
To have 8 people who truly need the money and they're fighting in this game.
But that happens like on American Idol and stuff like that. You know, like that's what happens in game shows.
I think Mr. Beast would just give everyone a decent amount of money.
Yeah, he'd have a hard time. But I do think that serialized content and potentially seasonal content can actually also help with creators building more sustainable brands. Because over time they can be like, okay, I'm on for these 6 to 12 weeks and then I'm off for a little bit. I'm totally on for these weeks and then I'm off. I think that's actually also proving that if you miss a couple of weeks on YouTube, it's okay. Jimmy doesn't upload sometimes for weeks on end and then comes back and is still the number one creator right now. So I think it shows you that so long as you're creating something that's conversational, that follows some of these storytelling tactics, people are going to watch it. This new format of YouTube that mirrors more of what Netflix is doing. Because we're all fighting for the same attention, right? If I'm watching Squid Game, that means I'm not watching TikTok, it means I'm not watching YouTube, right? If I'm watching YouTube, it means I'm not watching Netflix. So something's happening where someone is getting pushed out. And I think creators are slowly going to probably find their way to make similar types of formats, not the same budgets, but storytelling tactics and serialized content that might solve that problem.
Squid Game pushed me to think about what is possible with creators. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything dominate a conversation globally in such a short amount of time like Squid Game and have such a ridiculous impact on all types of economies, mm-hmm. whether it's people searching for van shoes mm-hmm. or the specific honeycomb cookie was supposedly like everyone's buying them and eating them.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Jimmy Fallon doing licking a honeycomb to get the umbrella out, right? It's like,
and that has a lot to do, right, with the fact that Netflix is in 190 countries, that they have the infrastructure to put out a show in 34 different languages mm-hmm. all at once. But if you look at what's happening on YouTube, channels are starting to dub over and mm-hmm. subtitle their videos. Mm-hmm. Eventually, maybe there will be a YouTube channel or organization that could release a series all in one day. And maybe it could have some sort of mm-hmm. similar type of reaction.
Yep. Unilingo, the company that does Mr. Beast, does Veritasium, I think starting to do Mark Rober as well. They're all launching multiple channels and they're doing it pretty quickly. So when that catches up, does Mr. Beast's video get translated in 5 different languages and get released on the same day in all of those languages?
Because those channels all have very different audiences. Mm-hmm.
And does YouTube actually slowly start to roll out, like similar to how you can choose what resolution you're watching it in? Can you choose what language you're watching it in? Mm-hmm. Right now you can choose your subtitles, but could you choose what language you're watching it in? Now all of a sudden channels are going to become way more global, right? So I think that's probably in our future where, again, this is a global entertainment industry now. The internet has changed that completely, that now we live in a global entertainment industry and you do have to make content that's global.
I don't think I realized though truly how powerful Netflix is until Squid Game and seeing some of the numbers they released about Bridgerton. Mm-hmm. Like 85 million plus people in 28 days watched at least 2 minutes. That's right. Crazy when you think about it, because yep. most people watch Netflix, I think, with other people around them. So I feel like a lot of people find shows after the fact, 2 months, 3 months down the line. And 2 minutes of an episode is pretty substantial. Mm-hmm. If you think about how social media ranks a view, mm-hmm. 30 seconds on YouTube, yeah. like 10 seconds or something on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That's just a colossal amount of viewership.
Yeah. The other thing that I was really thinking about over the weekend when I finished Squid Game was that the thing that we all have in common, us as well as the writers of Squid Game, is that we are all writers. Like every creator is a writer. Mm-hmm. They're writing out a story to keep you engaged. That's what we're all doing. And I think creators are going to start to learn more from traditional media. Like there's stuff from Hollywood's past and learnings that writers have been using for years and years and years that I think if you take the time to learn those things as a creator and study them, you can apply them to your work. Save the Cat is a book that a lot of screenwriters read And it's kind of like your first step into being a writer is reading this book, Save the Cat. And it kind of really opens your eyes to understanding how to make someone care about a character. Like, how do you build a connection? When do you believe that you should root for the main character? And that is a really important skill to have as a content creator. And I think these worlds are just starting to match from a storytelling perspective, not from a production value perspective, but from a storytelling perspective. You have to compete. You have to be telling a compelling story.
They are starting to follow similar business models, though. Mm-hmm. If you look at, you know, Netflix is now selling Squid Game merchandise
right
with Walmart, and they're selling merch from some of their other franchises and some of their other shows. They are getting into gaming by hiring a head of gaming, and people right. are saying Squid Game should have an actual video game. Oh, that yeah. could be a reality for mm-hmm. Netflix. So they are diversifying the ways that they make money beyond just direct-to-consumer revenue. And that's something that I think creators have been doing for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Queen's Gambit drove sales up, right? I mean, the Vans shoes.
Netflix is just at a crazy position where they are able to create stardom globally with mm-hmm. one series. They can make products sell out. They can totally change the face of businesses.
I think the main thing they create, and this is what all storytellers create, is culture. If you're a good enough storyteller with a big enough distribution, you create culture. And I think what we're seeing with Netflix is they are like a culture factory. They can create culture. Vans getting bought is just a microcosm of how much we're learning from Squid Game.
Yeah.
What was the most unexpected narrative twist for you?
The fact that if you kill someone, they're out of the game.
Yeah, that was good. For me, it was when Sang-woo killed the girl.
Yeah. I could have seen that coming.
You could have seen it coming.
There's only three left. They all have
knives.
But
I felt very connected to her. She was such a compelling character because she was trying to do this for her brother. And
look, she gained 16 million followers on Instagram.
I guess so. She won.
And she became an ambassador for Louis Vuitton a couple days ago.
Right. So, okay. Yeah.
She's doing okay.
Okay. She's doing fine.
All right. That's it for this episode. Let us know, what did you think of Squid Game? Also, did you watch it dubbed or with subtitles?